This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Maybe the most dramatic sporting event of the year so far. I don't think that's an exaggeration. We didn't really get a super memorable NFL playoff game. The AFC Championship game was really good. You know, Washington's win over Tampa in the wild card weekend was pretty good. Ovechkin's record-setting goal a week ago, pretty memorable, but I don't think anything matched the up and down drama of Rory McIlroy's pursuit of another major championship in golf, like what happened at the Masters yesterday. Good morning, everybody. Yeah, there's going to be some golf talk on the show today. Denny McCarthy shot 1-under-71 yesterday to finish in a tie for 29th at the Masters. He'll be on the show with me today at 12 noon. Ben Standig will join us an hour earlier. We'll do some NFL draft with Ben and then maybe another NFL draft segment with another guest before the day is over. Alex Ovechkin scored his first goal since setting the record last weekend. Lots went on in sports this weekend. He's now at 896. The Caps are reeling a bit with 2 games left in the regular season. They have been eliminated from the President's Trophy race. Winnipeg is going to win that. What's still to be determined, however, is the Caps' first-round opponent. Columbus beating the Caps back-to-back over the weekend actually puts them in the mix. They're 3 points behind Montreal with 2 games to go. So the Caps' first-round opponent, which the playoffs start this coming weekend, will either be Montreal or Columbus. So that's a TBD this week thing. I'm going to get to Rory. I'm going to get to what happened yesterday. We're going to talk about that for a while. But I do have a what do you got to start the show. The NBA regular season came to an end yesterday. The Wizards finished it in Miami with the most dramatic victory for the Wizards. There haven't been many this season. This is what it sounded like. Chris Miller, Drew Gooden on the call yesterday for Monumental. So, in many ways, it's not a game they really wanted to win. They only dressed 7 players with the idea of losing is better than winning. Why? Because the win actually means the Wizards finished the NBA season with the 2nd worst record rather than the worst record in the league. Utah claimed that courtesy of the Wizards' buzzer-beating win. By the way, the shot by Bob Carrington was so difficult. It was a bank shot, double-teamed, buzzer about to sound, gets it off, high off the glass. It was a big-time shot. And if the game had meant something, it would have been a memorable finish. Now, the Wizards and the Hornets and the Jazz all have equal odds of getting the number one overall pick. 14% chance. All right, that's what you get for finishing with one of the three worst records in the league. And this year's draft in June, 2 months away from it, will be a huge one because Cooper Flagg is at the top of it. And so winning the lottery means winning the chance to take Cooper Flagg, a potential franchise-changing talent, an organization-changing talent and player. What the Wizards also increase the possibility of by winning the game is that they could get a worse pick if they don't finish in the lottery in the top four. The lottery selects the top four, and then after that it goes in order of worst to best records. And the Wizards, by winning that game at the buzzer, means they could pick sixth if the absolute worst case happened on draft lottery night, instead of the worst case being fifth. Now, with that said, man, they played with seven players, no veterans, all young players, and Bub Carrington ends up hitting a game winner as they dressed seven against the Miami Heat, who were also resting a few of their starters because they're playing in the play-in round in the Eastern Conference playoffs. No Bam Adebayo, no Tyler Hero, but still a 119-118 Wizards win on the final Sunday of the regular season. The Wizards finish 18-64 on the year. A year in which I know most of you weren't paying attention did produce some decent feedback on the players they drafted last year. Alex Saar had a Rookie of the Year contention season. He probably won't win it, but he may finish second. Kyshawn George, I thought at times, looked like a player that has a really good future in the NBA. Bub Carrington, the same. They made a trade, you know, at the deadline that brought in another very young player in A.J. Johnson. He's all of 20 years old. The 19 and the 20 and the 21-year-olds are plentiful in Washington. And I think, you know, there are some players that can be a part of something that is good a few years down the road. They still need that superstar player. I don't know that we learned anything about the Wizards ending up with a true superstar player. But Alex Saar certainly showed a lot at times for a guy that was picked number two overall, is 19 years old, 7 feet, 210, showed a lot of versatility and some really good defensive skills as well. Anyway, the Wizards did a Wizards type of thing. It was exciting to see how excited they were, but if they have total lottery failure and bad luck, they could potentially pick sixth instead of the worst case being fifth. But it did not change their percent chance of getting the number one pick overall. The NBA playoffs, which start with the play-in games this week, and the Golden State Warriors will be in that in out west, but they get underway with the, you know, the 16 teams after the play-in games this week, next weekend as well, Saturday and Sunday, and that'll be the same with the NHL playoffs. So we will be into that time of year of the NBA and the NHL playoffs going on simultaneously as we build towards the NFL draft, which is now a week and a half away, a week from this Thursday night. Lots of draft talk coming up on the show. Let's get to the golf and Rory. So the golf yesterday, you know, was for me, and I know not everybody loves it, but that's about as good as sports can be on an afternoon if you're watching the whole thing. But even if you just tuned in at the end for the drama of Rory missing the putt on 18, the short putt on 18, and then coming back and hitting an unbelievable second shot and then making the putt that I think a lot of people thought he might miss in the playoff was incredible sports theater. It's a moment in which you just say, if you're watching it, man, sports can really be awesome. Even if you're not a golf fan. I don't even know if you needed to know the backstory. That certainly helped to kind of understand the emotion that came out of Rory McIlroy in the moment. You know, we talked about this going into the Masters last week, Rory's backstory. You know, Rory McIlroy was a golf prodigy, seen somewhat, you know, as a young player, as the eventual kind of successor to Tiger Woods. He won four majors, you know, fairly quickly, and then went silent in the majors for 11 years until yesterday. And it was one heartbreak after another. Couldn't close, couldn't complete a comeback, whatever it was, whatever the situation, he just kept coming up empty in the majors until yesterday. He had four, all right? It's not like he hadn't won any, and four's a lot, you know? But he had never won the Masters and hadn't won one in 11 years. A Masters would complete the career Grand Slam, which it did yesterday, and he joined five other all-time greats to complete that career Grand Slam. The Grand Slam, for those of you who don't know, is winning the Masters, the U.S. Open, the British Open, and the PGA Championship, the four majors. That wasn't really the weight that he was carrying around all of these years. It wasn't about winning the Grand Slam. That was icing on the cake, and winning at Augusta was something that he wanted to do, and people thought he would win a lot of times at Augusta. From the time that, you know, in 2011, when he took the lead to the back nine and hit one so far left, they're still looking for the ball, and he shot 80 on the final round of that particular one. Now, that was not part of the 11 years of not winning majors. That happened before he went on his run of winning majors. But winning another major was the weight. You know, if it had come at the U.S. Open or the PGA Championship or the British Open, it still would have been that level of reaction. The weight wasn't the Grand Slam. It was that he hadn't won one of these since 2014, and the expectation was that he would have had double-digit Grand Slams at this point in his career. He's won everywhere else. I mean, during the 11 years, he's been the best player in the game, but just no majors. And it hasn't been a thing for 11 years because players, great players, exceptional players, players who are expected to win, you know, a major a year, they go sometimes 2-3 years without winning one. So the pressure really started to build in 2016, 2017, after he'd gone 2 or 3 years without winning one. That's when the pressure started to build. And hit it. It's been building now for 6, 7 years, 8 years. When's he going to win another one? You know, it was, you know, the comps, and we talked about this last week, the comp currently for, you know, sports fans and football fans in particular is Lamar Jackson. You know, that's really the comp right now. Lamar Jackson with the MVPs, the multiple MVPs, and he hasn't even gotten to a Super Bowl. And for Lamar, he hasn't played well in the postseason. And like Rory, to a certain degree, he's kind of got the perception, whether it's true or not, that he's really kind of come up short in the biggest spots. You know, the Chiefs AFC Championship game last year, not this year. You know, the Buffalo game this year, even though, you know, he drove him down the field and there was a 2-point conversion for the tie and a drop, still he had a terrible fumble and a terrible interception. And that's kind of the current sports comp for Rory. You know, Rory's no longer a part of that conversation. It would be Lamar Jackson. We've mentioned a couple of others, Josh Allen. We mentioned a coach last week. Max brought up Kyle Shanahan. You know, Andy Reid felt that pressure for many years. John Elway was really the one, you know, along with Marino, and Marino never got there. But Elway's reaction when he finally won it, you know, when they finally got his first in that win over the Packers, and this one's for John, you know, after he had lost three of them. You know, it's different in that Rory actually had four majors, but it was so under expectations. And it was Ovechkin before he won the cup in 2018. Remember Ovechkin's reaction when, you know, the final seconds ticked off the clock in Vegas in 2018 in Game 5. It was like this incredible weight had been taken off his shoulders. It had been burying him, and it's been doing the same for Rory for years. Ovechkin before, you know, the day that he won the cup, the reaction similar to what you saw from Rory. It's part of the drama of sports is when somebody with high expectations, you know, using the word failure is harsh, but in the on the biggest stage has failed over and over and over again. And you're like, oh my God, when is this person going to punch through and win it? That thing in sports that happens where the expectations are massive and yet, you know, the player or the coach doesn't seem to reach them, even though they come close, even though it's so obvious they should. Rory had plenty of second place finishes, top fives, top tens, but no wins for 11 years. We talked about, you know, last week, I think we did a call segment, you know, on the others in sports. I think after Rory won yesterday, now in sports, it's like it's about Lamar Jackson getting one. Yesterday was such a roller coaster ride because it was so him. If you watch golf and you've watched him on the biggest of stages, he does choke. And yet he also hits these incredible shots. He opened up yesterday double bogey. In two holes, he had given up the two-shot lead that he took into the final round. I'll just tell you right now, I didn't think after DeChambeau made that putt on 18 on Saturday, I didn't think that Rory would win. I thought DeChambeau would win. He's the one that has actually come up big. He did not come up big. He played poorly yesterday and shot 75, putted poorly, you know, more so than anything else. And Rory said afterwards, the double bogey on number one, which just was so Rory McIlroy, two-shot lead, all of the pressure, is he going to do it? And it didn't take more than 15 minutes on the first hole to realize, nope, he's not going to do it. Anybody that watches golf knew after he sailed one 10 feet by the hole for par that there was no way after he double bogeyed. And then he said, actually, that was calming. It was like, could it get any worse? And he parred too, which is a birdie hole. And the lead had evaporated. And they were both there. You know, he's down a shot after two holes. Down a shot after two holes. But the birdie at three and the birdie at four steadied him. Then he birdied nine. And all of a sudden, all right, he's building a lead. A four-shot lead that he takes to the back nine. And then number 10, if you're watching this and you know the story and you know the career, and if you're a Rory fan, and I know not everybody is, I wanted him to win desperately. When he stepped to the tee at 10 because of the memory of 2011, where he absolutely blew up on the back nine, starting with his tee shot at number 10, you're like, oh my God, just put it in play. Just put it in play. And he did, and he birdied 10. And it's like, okay, all right, this thing is over. He's 14 under. At that point, I think at one point he had a seven-shot lead for Justin Rose, who ended up in the playoff with him. I think his birdie at 10 was a seven-shot lead over Justin Rose in that moment. And then he bogeys 11, tough shot, and that's such a tough hole. And then came 13. he decides to go conservative, which everybody said was the right play. He's laying up on the par five at 13. He had 242 left. Certainly could reach that easily with an iron, like a mid-iron. And he lays up. He plays it conservatively. He's got a big lead. You know, going into the water on that second shot, which is the risk, you could blow the lead. So he plays it conservatively. And then he does something that normal players do. He shanked one. He shanked one into the creek with a just, it was an easy punch chip shot to the green. Take two putts, walk off with a par, you're in great shape. And he shanks one. And he makes double bogey. And oh my God, it is a problem. 14 he bogeys. 15. All of a sudden, the brilliance of McIlroy, the 7-iron into the green. You knew at that point he wasn't going to lay up because here comes Justin Rose and the lead has evaporated. But he still missed the putt. He missed the eagle putt from 6 or 7 feet. Had the birdie, and then came the big shot at 17 after he missed a makeable putt at 16. And what was interesting is after the unbelievable 7-irons at 15 and then at 17, the shot at 17, brilliant, and then he made the putt. And now he's up a shot with one hole to go. Justin Rose in the clubhouse at minus 11. Rory at minus 12. And Jim Nantz, I love Nantz. I love him. He's an all-time great. There's no doubt about it. He's given us the backstory, the childhood, the, you know, running out of tokens for the driving range, the family story, the whole thing, as if this thing's over. Did anybody? He's got a par 18. He still has to par 18. And I think a lot of people are probably thinking this is the biggest pressure spot. Now he's got a one-shot lead. All he's got to do is par to win. And Nantz, I don't know, man. Plus, during that, they went to an interview with Bryson DeChambeau. I didn't want to hear from him. Just, I wanted to see how he was dealing with the pressure, you know, physically. Because he was feeling it. But he had just come off majestic birdies, majestic shots at 15 and 17. But remember, he missed that eagle putt at 15. That was a big miss. Birdied the hole, missed the putt at 16. But he made the one at 17. And I don't know if anybody else got the sense that Nantz and CBS seemed to be kind of like, this is his victory march up 18. No, it isn't. He's got a par. Hits a great drive. And then from a buck 25, and apparently not the same lie that he had in the playoff, he shanks another one. Now, that wasn't the true shank, but he hits a terrible, choking dog shot into the trap. But he hits a great trap shot, which leaves him with a very makeable 4 to 5 footer. But if you know Rory and you've watched him, you know he misses these. And he missed. And in that moment, just like at number one, I'm like, can he win? No. Justin Rose has been there. He's going to win in this playoff. The drama, the up and down drama, the shot he hit at 6 or at 7, you know, with the 9-iron over the trees where he was some of the shots he hit and then some of the great shots. I don't know if we've ever seen a round like this one in the spot that he was in. The great shots, the brilliance on display, and at the same time, some of the biggest choked shots and putts that you've ever seen. The double bogey at 1, the shank at 13 to make double bogey. He made 4 double bogeys in the tournament. And then the shots at 15 and 17. But then the miss shorty for the win on 18. And then he comes back in that playoff is so dramatic. Because they both hit great drives. I was worried. I mean, him on the tee after what he had just gone through at 18 and missing that putt. I thought there's a chance he's hitting OB. He's going to absolutely slice one hard right, or he's going to hit it right into the trap, you know, on the left part of the fairway. But he hits a titanic drive. And he's got, he said, 2 yards less. I think they showed it at 125 yards, but he liked the lie better, he said, than the one he had at the end on 18, coming up 18 with DeChambeau. And Rose hits a great shot, and he's got a birdie putt, a makeable birdie putt. He had hit the long one at 18 to get to 11 under par. And then Rory hits another unbelievable shot, a wedge to 3 feet, 2.5 feet. Still wasn't sure because I thought there was a chance that Rose made his. He didn't. He left it outside. There was no break in the putt. He thought there was. And then Rory steps up and knocks it in. And there are a lot of people that have watched Rory's career. Even if you were just tuning in yesterday, you probably thought there was a chance he would miss that one after he missed the one on 18. But he made it. And the emotion was so, I thought, so genuine. It was like one of those moments where you could tell that an individual who's been kind of tortured by this for over a decade, not winning another one, but the expectations every time he shows up for one is that he should win. And just it kept building and building and building. And he's only 35. He's going to have a chance, and maybe he goes on a run now that he's gotten this one off his back. But the emotions and what followed for those few minutes afterwards, for me, that's what makes sports great, especially if you've kind of been there following the journey and following the heartbreak, you know, and seeing what had happened over all of these years. He's won a lot. He's won a hell of a lot on tour, you know, but this sport is about the majors, you know. All these sports are about the postseasons, the playoffs, the majors in the individual sports. And for him to get that one done in the way he did it, I thought it was as good a sports theater moment as we've seen in a long time. And the day leading up to it was just so wild that it was just nice to see him close it. Because I'll tell you what, man, after he missed that putt on 18 and had to go to a playoff, if he doesn't win, I mean, it is an all-time choke job. All-time. Maybe not to where Greg Norman blew a six-shot lead. You would come up with chokes that were more mathematically worse in terms of the lead they gave up, but to miss the putt on 18 at the final hole, at the 72nd hole, to win it when he pushed that, you know, left of the hole. I mean, I was worried he wouldn't make the comeback to force the foot and a half comeback to force the playoff. You know, there were other things that went on during the day. Patrick Reed finished third, two shots back. Patrick Reed made a bogey on 13 from 3 feet. 3.5 feet. He missed a birdie putt. Then he missed the comeback 2.5, 3-footer for par. He ended up bogeying that hole. He'd have been in the playoff had he just made that putt. He drained one from the fairway on 17. Scottie Scheffler played well yesterday. Nobody played as well as Justin Rose did yesterday. Justin Rose had an unbelievable round. The man made 10 birdies at Augusta on the final day to shoot 66. It was, I think, is just, look, team sports and some of the sports that we like a lot more than golf provide those moments. Yesterday was one of those days, and it was all about Rory. It was all about his, you know, torturous journey over the last 11 years, and to see him win it, you know, and then to hear, you know, Bryson DeChambeau afterwards say, well, he didn't talk to me the whole round. The day before, Bryson didn't talk to his playing partner. That guy, you can have him. Not a massive fan of DeChambeau. I know his game, and I think he's a clutch performer. I was expecting him to win yesterday. I really was going into it. I thought two shots back after the way he closed on Saturday, this dude's built for this. None of this stuff ever really phases him. And Rory, like, better get off to a quick start or it's going to be a problem. And, of course, he doubles number one. And then he's actually down a shot after two holes. DeChambeau, though, to me is an ass, honestly. And to take, you know, a swipe at Rory about him not talking to him during the round. They had their moment on the range, if you saw that before. Rory was dealing with demons, man. He was dealing with, he admitted to nerves. Gives a crap whether or not he talked to you during the round. Anyway, incredible sports. Max, you're a golf fan. What'd you think?
So I was at the Caps game, so I didn't get to watch the playoff, but I did see the final shot, and I was glued to the recaps when I got home. It was tremendous. Like the whole roller coaster of a round it was. Like I watched the first, I think, six or seven holes, and that back and forth at the beginning just let you know that it was going to be a long day of golf for both Bryson and Rory. I'm so happy for him that he finally got this monkey off his back, because you could see all the emotion just pour out of him. And that was, that was 15 years of emotion, just putting on a brave face, 11, coming to it. Yeah. Just putting on a brave face, showing up at Augusta every year and just trying like hell to make it happen. I'm unbelievably happy for Rory that he finally was able to get this done.
I saw somebody put this, try to put it in football terms. They said, for someone that doesn't understand golf, can somebody put it in football terms? And I said, you know, I thought to myself that would actually be, you know, an interesting conversation. And we'll open up phone lines, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Anything that you want to say with respect to the Masters yesterday, phone lines are open. But try to put it in football terms. I've got a way to put it in football terms, and I'll give you that when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show. The Team 980 and theteam980.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
980 if you want to weigh in on the Masters, or if you want to explain the Rory performance in football terms. You know, I've mentioned, you know, kind of the comparisons to those that felt that, you know, career-long weight of not winning the big one. Again, not exactly apples to apples because Rory had won four, but he had gone 11 years without winning. I think the Elway comparison is a good one. He had failed in his first three opportunities, typically not because of him necessarily, but there was so much pressure on him to finally win one, in which he did. Currently, I would, you know, mention Lamar Jackson as the guy that has to break through, has to do something. In terms of an actual game, you know, or a performance, because of the up and down nature, I mean, he hit four of the best shots you'll ever see, and then he had three or four of the worst shots you'll ever see. To me, it's a Brett Favre performance. You know, it's a four touchdown, three pick, you know, wild back and forth where you're like, what are you doing in one moment? And then you're like, oh my God, what a throw. Like Favre was always that way as a gunslinger. One of my all-time favorites, Philip Rivers, was that way where you'd be like, oh my God, this guy is on fire. He's thrown for 360 and four touchdowns. And then it's this back-breaking pick, you know, at the end. And maybe that ties it up, and then I don't know. It's that kind of performance in football. It's a quarterback that throws, you know, it's a Jameis Winston type of performance. Not exactly, Winston's never had the moment that Rory has had. Favre had some, you know, unbelievable games. The NFC Championship game that he played with Minnesota, I went and looked this one up, that they lost in overtime. He threw for 310 yards, a touchdown. He was brilliant in the game, but he threw two huge picks. Now, they lost that game. He also threw for like 270 in the frigid temperatures against the Giants. That game they lost 23-20. Threw two horrible picks, including the one in overtime, but also was brilliant throughout. Rory got through, but those are the kinds of comps, you know, football comps that you would give it. 301-230-0980 if you want to weigh in on anything dealing with the golf yesterday. It was not, you know, exactly the Elway breakthrough. It was not exactly, you know, the Cubs or the Red Sox finally winning the World Series in terms of team things, because he had won before. But man, it really felt like an individual that had been carrying around a ton of baggage for a long period of time. Ian wants to weigh in. Ian, go ahead.
Even though Rory has four majors, it almost felt like he had zero.
Yeah.
Because of the time gap, the amount of runner-up finishes, the amount of heartbreak. And the comps to me are many, many, many players who were losers before they're winners. Michael Jordan, John Elway, LeBron James, Peyton Manning. There's so many athletes who don't win early. It's easy when you're Bird and Magic and Derek Jeter, where you win early in your career, Brady, and the narrative is he's a winner. But guys like Peyton Manning and Elway and these guys where they would battle and lose and lose and lose. And, you know, it's funny. People almost forget that Jordan lost for the first seven years of his career. LeBron, yeah. the first nine years of his reaction
when he had won it. It was also in the wake of his father's death, too. But way he hugged the Larry O'Brien trophy and wouldn't let go of it. Yes, that's what yesterday felt like, no doubt.
Yeah. And so I think it's one of these reminders, and you and I talk about this on DM a lot, is how you felt when Gary Williams finally got past a Sweet 16, and then to the Elite Eight, then to the Final Four, then the year later. It was almost like just getting past the Elite Eight, Sweet 16 felt so great. So a lot of coaches, a lot of players, they're not winners until they are. So narratives change, and it felt amazing watching Rory.
Doesn't mean, by the way, talking about some of the DM things going back and forth, it doesn't mean that they suck, which is typically your take, if they haven't won it. But I, you bring up Maryland. Thanks for the call, Ian. You bring up Maryland. Yes. I mean, when they broke through and they got to a Final Four for the first time in program history, it was like, for the program itself, really, it was two coaches. It was Lefty and Gary. The weight had built up because so many times for, basically a 25 to nearly 30-year period, Maryland had teams capable of going to the Final Four and even winning the whole thing. In some cases, they couldn't even go to the tournament because of the tournament being much smaller in size. But I'll never forget, for me as a sports fan of, three or four teams hardcore, that was one of the most memorable wins. It wasn't the championship win over Indiana. That was massive, don't get me wrong. But it was beating Stanford. It was beating Casey Jacobson and Stanford in the Elite Eight to go to the first Final Four in program history. It was incredibly emotional. Again, like we said, different in that Rory has won. Rory had won four, but God, I'm not here to give Ian a lot of credit all the time, but he put it perfectly. He had four, but it felt like over the last few years that he didn't have any. That's what had built up over time because the expectation was that he would have 10, 12 by now. And he only had four. He was stuck on four for 11 years. It was, in thinking about the way that LeBron and Michael and the big weight that was on, LeBron had it even more so. I mean, Michael, was banging his head against great teams, right? The Pistons in particular for those years. LeBron actually was coming up short over and over again and not playing great when they would come up short, whether it was losing to Orlando in six in the Eastern Conference Finals, getting bounced by Boston, which was his last game in Cleveland before he went to Miami. That first year in Miami, it was his breakthrough moment when they went to Boston about to get eliminated, and he went for 45 and triple-double, and it was the first time really in his career he had broken through and played clutch in a clutch moment. They still got beat in the finals by San Antonio before they finally won it, and he got his first. But the reaction in the relief, it's almost relief when you've had these expectations. It was for Elway, it was for Jordan, it was for LeBron. LeBron actually is a little bit more, I think, comparable to Rory in that he was the reason more often than not that he didn't break through. Whereas with guys like Jordan and Peyton and Elway, they were great. It was the team around them that typically failed. Now, Peyton did not have great playoff games, actually. But Jordan had brilliant playoff games. Elway was brilliant for the Broncos when they were getting hammered in Super Bowls by the Giants, by the 49ers, by the Redskins. And they just didn't have enough defensively. And Jordan, was carrying that team. LeBron often was part of the problem. you know, hiding in a corner, you know, instead of taking big shots against the Mavericks. The Mavericks, I'm sorry, were the first team that they lost to in Miami, the Dirk title. And LeBron's literally playing hot potato with the basketball. He's so nervous. I mean, go back and watch Game 3 of those NBA Finals. And that's the comp in terms of where he was at that point in his career. And Rory, you know, even yesterday, you know, it was – you don't see players shank one from whatever that was, the third shot, the layup, the third shot on 13 into a creek. You don't see professional players do that, but he did that. You rarely – look, the putt downhill at Pinehurst on 18 was a difficult putt. The one he missed on 16 was a choke job. That's the thing. He's had these moments where it's just been like – I saw there was a tweet from former major winner Steve Elkington. I don't know anything about Steve Elkington and what he's like on social media. I just saw this out there. He tweeted this at 6:54 p.m. last night. He said, that could be the greatest collapse in golf history. And effing CBS says, we have a playoff. Yes, there was not a lot of, you know, critical, constructive criticism of Rory falling apart. Now, he had had unbelievable holes at 15 and 17, and the birdie at 17 was incredible after the incredible approach shot. But to miss that putt on 18, yeah, we have a playoff. And the march to victory sort of tone that clearly Nance was prepared for the march to victory in all of the stories about him as a child. But it was so far from a march to victory. You knew he had to make par, and you knew if you're a golf fan, you knew that bogey and even double bogey were in play. At 18. Really, really compelling sports theater yesterday, without a doubt. All right, we got some things to get to. Ben's going to join us at 11. I wanted to talk quickly about an acquisition that Washington made after the show on Friday that I did not get a chance to address on the radio show, but they've added another quarterback. More on that next.
All right, Rory McIlroy has finally done it. The Masters monkey is off his back. He becomes the sixth golfer all time to achieve the career Grand Slam, first since Tiger Woods did it in 2001. In local news, Caps fell twice this weekend to the Columbus Blue Jackets on Saturday to 7-0 and Sunday 4-1. Columbus, still 3 points back from the Montreal Canadiens, are looking to fight their way into the playoffs. The Caps will close out their season this week, taking on the New York Islanders and the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Nats dropped their most recent series to the Miami Marlins, and they will take on Paul Skeens and the Pittsburgh Pirates today at 6:40 on 106.7 The Fan. The Wizards closed out their season in dramatic fashion last night versus the Miami Heat. Bob Carrington driving to the hoop in the waning seconds of the fourth quarter. He was the only rookie to play in all 82 games this season, and that's what's trending.
Ben Standing coming up in about 6-7 minutes. Denny McCarthy will join us at noon. Denny made the cut, finished tied for 29th. At the Masters. He'll join us at 12. We'll do some NFL draft talk, certainly with Ben, and you'll probably hear another guest on the show talking NFL draft today. So Friday after the show, Josh Johnson was signed by Washington. Yeah, that Josh Johnson? Can you even say that about Josh Johnson? He was here back in 2018. I would imagine they signed him to a one-year deal. I would imagine that means he is going to be the third-string quarterback behind Jaden Daniels and Marcus Mariota. Probably means that Sam Hartman ends up being on the practice squad, but you don't know. I mean, somebody gets injured, camp, you know, the whole thing. But the four quarterbacks going into camp will be Jaden, Marcus Mariota, Josh Johnson, and Sam Hartman. Josh Johnson is really one of the more remarkable and unique stories in the history of the NFL. Yeah, the history of the NFL. He has played on 14 NFL teams. That's a record. No player in the history of the game has ever played on 14 different teams. He's played on five of those 14 teams multiple times. He also, by the way, had a year in the XFL and a year in the UFL. His return to Washington after starting three games at the end of the 2018 season is the 25th time he has changed pro teams. 25 times he's changed pro teams. Now, if you remember his, you know, brief period here in 2018, it came after the Alex Smith horrific injury against the Texans. Colt McCoy then came in, broke his leg on Monday Night Football against the Eagles. They signed Mark Sanchez. Sanchez promptly got benched for Josh Johnson, who they had signed, and he played pretty well. First start, they beat Jacksonville to keep their playoff hopes actually alive. He was 16 of 25 for 151 yards, a touchdown, no interceptions, ran for 49 yards. They won the game 16-13. They were 7-7, and they were still in the hunt for a playoff spot. And the next week, they went to Tennessee and lost to the Titans, but they had the ball in Tennessee territory, down 19-16. Johnson had played pretty well. He had made some plays off schedule, and then he threw an absolute crushing interception to end the game, and that eliminated Washington from the playoffs that year. But the story of Josh Johnson, he was drafted in the fifth round back in 2008 out of San Diego, University of San Diego. The Bucs drafted him, and he's had this incredible journey since. 25th time he's changed professional teams. 14th different team. 14 different teams over the years. He's 39 years old next month, and after starting three games for Washington at the end of the 2018 season, in the last six NFL seasons, he's only started one game. It came in Baltimore, replacing Lamar Jackson in 2021. He threw for 304 in a loss to Cincinnati. He's familiar with Washington because he played here, but Adam Peters signed him as part of the 49er front office on two different occasions in 3 years, and he also played with assistant QB's coach David Blau back in Detroit in 2019. I wanted you to hear this soundbite, which Jay Gruden talked about Josh Johnson. It came back in October. It was during the week in which Jaden got hurt and Marcus Mariota came in against Carolina, played well, and then the lead up to the Chicago game, the Hail Mary game, would Marcus Mariota start for Jaden Daniels? We didn't know, you know, at the time what would happen. We didn't really know until game day what was going to happen in that game. And the conversation with Jay, you know, went back to 2018 and all of the injuries to the quarterbacks. And I said, you know, that guy Josh Johnson played pretty well for you at the end. And I asked him, and you'll hear me ask him about Josh Johnson, and you'll hear what he said about Josh Johnson. I've asked you about him before. Guys like him, clearly there's something about him, right? He's smart. He picks up systems. He can throw it well enough because everybody, when he's available, seems to want him. He's never unemployed.
He is smart as hell is what he is. And he can come in a pinch and pick up your system in a minute. I mean, I signed him in Cincinnati when, to be our backup because we were in a pinch, and he came right in, knew everything, knew all the calls, knew all the snap counts. He was just zipped right in there, and then when we obviously had the injuries, he's the guy I really wanted at first. I screwed up because, you know, we went with a more experienced guy because we're still in a playoff hunt, and some people wanted to go with Sanchez because I think Kavanaugh coached him or it was Jets. And, you know, they had some familiarity with Sanchez. I like Sanchez, but I always tell the coaches that, hey, if you're going to this type of quarterback, you got to err on the side of athleticism because, you know, we don't want a pure pocket passer coming in a week and try to learn the offense and protections and routes. When we went to Josh, you know, we did a lot of good things with him. He did his own reads. He got himself out of trouble and did a pretty good job.
Smart as hell, he said about Josh Johnson. He had said that to me before, too, maybe a couple of years earlier. It's interesting because you don't stick around and get signed over and over again a record number of times in the NFL when you're not producing or really have never produced on the field. you know, maybe not his fault. He didn't get the opportunities to produce on the field. But you don't get those opportunities without all the other stuff. You know, smart, great teammate, you know, easy to have around. The Chase Daniels and Josh Johnsons of the world are always interesting to me, in part because they've made so much money for barely even playing throughout their career. And what really makes them interesting is that to most NFL fans, you would not be able to pick Josh Johnson out. They're faceless. No matter how many years they've been in the league, they're faceless, but they're not nameless. You know the name because they keep getting signed over and over again because there's something about these guys that everybody in the league agrees on. They all agree that Josh Johnson's out there. I want that dude in my locker room. I want him in my quarterback room. Even though they may not want him to play. Always interesting to me. Washington, by the way, has a quarterback room with lots of intangibles in it, in Mariota and Josh Johnson. And then on the staff as well. Ben Standing next.